Hey, y'all, we're the Davenport Gang, three guys who sit on a couch and watch movies and react to the visual effects.
And it's movie visual effects on the radio. That's it. That's the gag. That's the whole gag. We watch movies on the radio and react to what cannot be seen. While ironically, what is heard really is an effect we made or stole.
Okay, so let's watch the first clip, which is from the movie Matchstick.
I have not seen this.
Whoa!
What?
Watch this.
Wait.
What?
Are you Matchstick?
Oh!
I hope that's not Matchstick. What the heck was that?
Now, how do you think they did that?
I don't know. If you think you have to choose between quality furniture and good nutrition, you are wrong. You can get well-made furniture pieces delivered to you as well as nutritiously assembled meals every month. Furniture meals will have you sitting pretty and eating pretty right. You need to rethink furniture and nutrition.
I don't know either. It's a lot of those things are really hard to figure out when you see them in the movies.
Now, I do know how some of the sound effects were done because I did them.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know that.
We all know that. We all did them together.
Yeah, so we're not going to go into all that about how we crushed vegetables. And we didn't do the gun sound effects because we don't have... even if we had some guns that we wanted to fire, there's nowhere really to record them being fired. That isn't problematic. And so we've also utilized a swing line stapler to sound like a gun being... cocked or whatever, what have you, and something else, maybe a hole puncher. I don't know what, I forget now looking back.
I remember we broke some celery.
We definitely broke some celery. We dropped bags of potatoes and punched some wet towels. Well, actually, paper towels wrapped up in duct tape and then punched those and then punched them wet, and then punch them covered with blood, and then punch some friends, said, could you mind just being punched in the face? And it never sounds right. You think, well, the real Foley is the real thing, right? No. Like, real horses are always disappointing you. I could have gotten coconuts. And the same thing with you punch somebody, you go, that doesn't sound correct. We're so used to just vegetables being messed up for a salad as being the go-to sound effects that if we really heard someone being punched in the face, I don't even know how to mic that. That would be difficult. So we don't want to even explore that. Now, you could go to great lengths and make like a statue, like a puppet, and punch the puppet, which is an old theater expression. I'm going to go punch the puppet. I'll be back in a minute. And what's that mean? Could mean anything. It's like see a man about a horse. And we used to do that a lot of times. It meant to go to the bathroom. But I think it really was traced to something real. When you went to the bathroom, there would be some guy there with a horse. I don't know whether they're trying to sell it to you or, you know. And you'd say, just if anybody asks while you're peeing or pooping, say you're here to see me. All right. About this horse. Okay. So don't say, I'm in here pooping. All right. Say, I'm here with this guy with this horse. That was the horse. The horse is there too. He's clapping his little hollow hands together like that.
"But I wish I had some coconuts," he said.
"Why?"
"Well, I like to pretend that I'm in the theater."
"Oh, that's nice. What do you like to do in the theater, Radio Horse?"
"I like to play South Pacific, like I'm in the South Pacific, and so I make a bra out of the coconuts, or I'm on Gilligan's Island, so I'd make a bra out of coconuts."
It seems to me, but I don't know a lot about the design of undergarments, but I feel like a bra made of coconuts is not a very good idea. First of all, no one ever gets their cup size right to begin with. Could you imagine if they didn't have much flexibility or anything? You'd go, yeah, it's really terrible. I guess you could say, oh, I need a little more room. I'm going to scrape out some of the coconut meat. But in my mind, maybe they're already hollowed out. I don't know how that works. I did grow up around coconuts. And why is that? Well, because I lived in Coconut Village. Is that in Florida? It sounds like it. I just made it up. But it does sound like a place in Florida. Oh, Coconut Village in Florida. Coconut Village Elementary School, Coconut Village Middle School, went all through all the Coconut Village public schools. And coconut is one of those unfortunate words that said enough times will cause psychosis. And that's happened to so many poor, lost, beautiful little stoners or something, so that find the demon word while they're high or something, and they say it, and they go, oh, that word has lost all meaning. I've said it only a few times, but it's enough that I realize that all language is nonsense, or something like that, and then your brain explodes. And all these things used to happen in the 60s because of our rampant imagination, because people's imagination was more untethered then, and people had them. And now I don't know if people have imaginations or not. I haven't gone around asking them. I'm just looking at their art. I don't know, to be honest. It seems like it's based on something that was imaginary, but I feel like, you know, these are, what do you think of this movie? All right, it's based on a 60s comic book. All right, what do you think? I don't know what to think. I don't know what to, I am no art critic, and I will look at movies and I say, I wonder how that's done. And sometimes I look at it and say, I know it's done poorly, I just can't tell you why. And that's something that a lot of us think when it comes to, now we have whole YouTube channels that'll tell you why the thing that you don't like sucks, which is great. It's some kind of wonderful confirmation thingy. And I like that. I need that. Sometimes you need, say, that's why you get together with friends and you talk about a third friend who's not there. You say, oh, what do you think of Daryl or Darren? I don't even know his name. Oh, that guy. And all that's, so do a little bit of that scapegoating. I'm not encouraging it. I'm just, oh gosh, why do people have to do that? Let's include everybody. I get very squeamish. And it doesn't mean that I love everybody or want to spend all my time with everybody or in a workspace that aren't some people I think. I'm not sure that's a person, that kind of thing. But, you know, there's all sorts of strategies to dealing with other human beings. And using your imagination is one of the best ways to deal with them. So let me give you some suggestions. Let's say there's someone at work you don't care for. Imagine they're not there. And I guess if they're a superior or something, it's difficult. So that's just one. I'm about to give you dozens. So if you go, no, that's a stupid one, you need to be a little patient, I think. I feel that way with the show in general. It's like, are you getting to something? Well, you're never going to find out, are you, if you have that kind of attitude. So maybe I'm getting to something. Maybe I'm not. But I will tell you this, that if I don't get to something, then please consider that there's nothing to get to. Oh, my goodness, we make our own. Got to make it up as we go along. There's nothing there. It'd be lovely, though. I wish there was some point to it all. And maybe there is. I'm pretty sure there is, Harry. All right, well, I'll tell you what. I'll buy your book about what it is, and then I'll make something up, and you buy mine back, and then at least we'll have money for food. I'm really a practically minded person. I practically mind that I'm a person or something. I'll think of something clever. I write it all down. That's how you got to do it. First of all, in radio, write it down. Don't just wing anything. You got to plan it. Everything needs to be planned. To wing, the expression comes from the way that birds just fly. It's just instinct, and they do it, and they stay aloft, and they don't think about it, and how wrong that is. And that's bad. Don't ever do that. What a bird should do, and I don't know why they do, and I encourage them to do it, is become self-conscious about every flap of their wing, or their army wing, their wingy arm. Think about it. Oh, is this flap going to keep me airborne, and just keep thinking that and everything like that. Every time you flap your arms, all when you're at home and you lay in your nest, imagine every beat of the wing, every time the feather cuts through the air. Envision it all. Leave nothing to chance. So you can write it all down so that there is at least a working script. And then, you know, the flying will be so much easier. But if you just simply fly, or what I call live your life, you know, you run into risks. You say you can't improvise. My goodness. Here's something I learned about improvisation. So, we're improvising. I learned this. So, if you're going to make stuff up on the spot, then you have to be very aware, hyper aware, and, living slightly in the future, at least in the moment, but really in the super moment, almost in the future. So you're paying a super lot of attention, and you're sort of running possibilities by quickly, you know, variants. So you're making choices very, very, very quickly, the way you do when you're terrified or at war or something like that. And that's what the stage is. Really, isn't that what theater is? Isn't it like standing before your enemies and say, these people are here to destroy me. And all I can do is hit them, shoot at them with these clever bullets in my witty gun. And witty gun is the name of my group. It's a fun group. You should come out. We don't give improv lessons, but we will make them up when you get there. We'll make something up. There's no fixed thing. Hey, I got better. You teach me. I like that better. Get there. You teach me what to do. That's the assignment. And if you can do that successfully, think about that. I'm going to advertise that. So you come and you have to pay me to do this. But you successfully teach me to be a big acting star or something, then that's on you. I think that would be its own. That'd be its own reward. And whatever you'd have to pay me to do that, I think would be worth it. I'd be your student. I made that mistake. I journeyed one time to the East to study with a guru and learn their martial arts and the philosophy and the religion and all. And I met the head priest guru, and I said, I'm interested in studying with you. And he goes, well, I don't know if I want to take on any students. And I go, you know, please consider it. And he goes, well, all right. And I go, all right. If we could just talk about pay, you know, how much does it pay? Is there health insurance? I'm going to need that. Do y'all have like dorms, or do I need to arrange for housing? And I guess that's not the way it works. I'm supposed to do this all for free. And I said, what is this apprenticeship for rich people? How am I going to study with the guru as an apprentice if I got to cover my own expenses? That's ridiculous. You're only going to get the super wealthy who want to go on and work for the really upper level, high level international gurus. And the only reason I'm saying it like that is because of Mark Bolan. And isn't that correct? He said metal guru. Guru. I know some people say guru, which is fine. But I like guru. Sounds more like a Flintstones character to me or something. It's Gazoo's brother, who was played by Tim Conway. I don't know if you remember that. So Harvey Korman was Gazoo. And then for a while they had on guru. And it was Tim Conway. Do you remember that? Oh, I love it. I love thinking about those things. I wonder how many people from Cleveland were on the Flintstones. That I never thought about before. That just came to me, just like that, on the radio. And you heard it happen to me. Oh, that is a strange thing, this broadcasting. I sometimes feel as if I'm sitting in the window of a department store.
What do you mean?
The wind, like if they had, I don't know if they still have them. I guess so. I haven't been on the sidewalk in so long. But do department stores, do any of them face the street? They had windows. And I may just be thinking this from Miracle on 34th and 80th Avenue. But they would have displays in there with mannequins and things like that, dressed up in the fashions. Now, in the holidays, they would have them dressed up as Santa Claus or elves or what have you. But then normally, they would just have on, you know, a beautiful gown by Yves Saint Laurent on them. And Fabergé. Is that one? And you could walk by, and I feel like I'm in one of those display cases. Now, at some point, I believe that, performance artists discovered those windows. And I remember even in my hometown, if there'd be a shop that had gone under, some local performance artist, punk performance artist, would say, come watch me do something in there. And I'd think, oh, That's great. I wonder if I could parlay my sort of like dysfunction and propensity for exhibitionism into some sort of art thing. Like, come look at me, look at me. I'm going to do that anyway. It'd be lovely to do it in a little cozy window or something. Y'all just come by and look at me anytime. It's like the early version of those cams. So I'm going to look into somebody's spy cam while they're working and doing whatever. And that was the early internet thing. Even now, maybe you could just say, well, watch me. Watch me, whatever I do during the day. Some people are so lonely, they'd say, I will do that. I'll watch that or a Marvel movie or something. It's either that or perish. That's how lonely I am, craving that human contact. Well, I would love to be human contact for you. Human contact paper? Is that something? Is contact paper, is that like fly paper? What is that? What am I thinking? But there's something like that. Let's say it is fly paper. And you get stuck on it. What does getting stuck on fly paper mean? That means that you were attracted to something. You thought, oh, maybe this is good for me. This maybe smells like delicious fly food. Honey, poo and honey mixed together, which is a very unpopular cereal flavor, but for a fly, it's a magical thing. It's like salt, sweet, bitter taste, jazz, or whatever that show is, of the five flavors. And the fly lands upon, and it's a trap to kill flies. So sometimes these things that we think are there to help us out. So here's free food. I'm going to land on it. Beware. Your little fly feet will stick to it. And I don't think that you have any lesser right to live just because you're a fly. And so I'm not going to do that to you as a fellow fly human. So I will never lure you onto something that's going to make you stick there and be trapped. I don't want you to be trapped. I want you to be able to fly and spend your limited little fly days, not crashing into a closed window or some other, what's another equivalent? That's what watching bad movies is like. It's like being a fly who's just crashing into a bad window until you're just exhausted. You rest exhausted at the bottom on the sill and you sort of pace. You don't really even have the energy to bash your head against the glass anymore. But that's what it is. I need to break into that world of cinema. I need to go into those movies where I know that the end is going to make sense. And that there's something beyond the end. Oh, when I contemplate my own death, I can't imagine the movie ending and not exiting the cinema, ending along with the movie. Oh, that makes it so painful then. So the movies are very important. And so things should be done correctly in them. And that's why I think the best movies don't have any pictures. Because, you know, that's going to lure you in a way that a fly thinks that, oh, that's the reality there, and he flies into the glass. But what we're doing here, and I say we, my friends and I on this couch, are trying to create for you something that is a movie without pictures. A not picture movie, no pictures. And the sound, well, the sounds aren't, it's not exactly a soundscape either. I went to a installation recently and, well, it was an exhibit. I don't know what it was, but somebody had an installation running there that had been made for a previous site. So it wasn't site specific, so it was weird because it was the sounds from some other place. But they were the sounds of children playing and a river and stuff like that. But there was no river there. And so I started to use my imagination. And I imagined that I was back at my house doing something I wanted to do instead of at that place listening to that. And I spent all my energy blocking it out. And I thought, I'm on a spaceship in bed. And everything's okay. I'm not here at this exhibit. And sometimes that's okay to think those things. I've thought those things. So I don't have to close my eyes on a train and say, I'm dying in a hospital. Have you ever done that? No, because I'd rather be on the train. I probably would do the opposite. Maybe I was doing the opposite and didn't realize it. Oh, I fear that sometimes. Sometimes when I'm really having a blissful moment. Let's say you're on a patio, the temperature is really nice. So you're on someone's deck. Maybe when no one's around, it's just you. You're sitting on an Adirondack chair on a deck on a really lovely day. The temperature is no temperature, really. It's just like, ooh, what am I? Is it cool? Is it warm? It's just lovely. There's a little breeze. There's a perfume in the air of the plants, the flowers, and you're laying there. And then you think, am I dead? Or am I dying? Have I gone somewhere in my head? Because secretly, there's been some horrible thing happened to me. And so what I'll do then is I'll start pinching my thigh really hard. Wake up, you son of a gun, like that. And I'll ruin it a little bit. But you can't really ruin moments. Because again, I'll think, well, no, maybe I am. Even if it is my imagination, I'm still here, sitting in this Adirondack chair, feeling the breeze blow through the area where my hair used to be. Feeling it on my face. I can feel air where you can't. And you can feel hair where I can't. And I should leave it at that, probably. Oh, my goodness. I remember the first time I realized that all my hair was gone and I had a big, long white beard. Because what had happened is I had just, as a young person, I fell asleep under a tree. And that's the last thing I remember. And then I woke up and, oh, what just happened? Now, I wish I was Pappy Van Winkle and I had fallen asleep with, you know, a cask in my lap or something. It's like, you know, that's now 20-year whiskey. Pappy, I want to sell it. That's how it all started. That's how it all started. The man in Pappy Van Winkle fell asleep, and he had high-end whiskey when he woke up because he had it with him. And now you might want to do that if you go on a spaceship or something. Say, I'm Hardy. I'm flying to Mars, and it takes so long, they cryogenically you. So I'm going to take my cryo nap, and I was thinking, do I bring something with me? I could bring something with me to age, like cheese or whatever. How's that work? I said, I don't quite know. But yeah, you could. If you're going to bring the whiskey, it has to be in the cask because it's got to age in the cask. Not the doesn't do any good to have it in the bottle already. So take that, ask for a cask of something. I don't know if everything is going to survive for 20 years. Whiskey, I don't want to go into the details of bourbon and aging bourbon, but it's surprising. It can get ruined if it stays in there too long. And we all know this. If you've ever tried to make your own whiskey in the basement, and I didn't get as far as, I cut down the white oak tree, and that's as far as I got. I had this white oak piled up, and I thought, well, the first thing I need to do is make staves, I guess. And also I had these big copper stills delivered. I still don't know what I'm going to use them for. I'm using them now. I take a little warm bath in there. I guess eventually I'll make a beverage in there. But right now, I just soak in it. I love it. I pretend that I'm being boiled alive by cannibals or something. Is this a tub? Or is this a soup colander? Not a colander. What do you call it? A soup crock or whatever. What's the big... What do witches have? Witches. Crockpot? Cauldron. Cauldron. I should know that from the old Cauldron Inn they used to go to. That was run by witches. They were lovely. And the cackling was a lot, though. And that's my only complaint. I'd give it 4 stars out of 5. But for the cackling, and there was an odor and that was accompanied by a sort of green smoke. And I can't put my finger on what it smelled like, but it wasn't right. A sort of resin or something? I don't know. It smelled like I imagine mummies would. Is that helpful? Oh, my goodness, if you've traveled a lot, have you ever run into a mummy, like on an international flight or anything? I always wonder that. I go, you know, I wonder if you run into a mummy in the wild. Like, perhaps, what's the easiest place? Hotel room? Go in a hotel room, go in there, there's somebody in bed, it's mummified remains. Is that likely? I mean, it depends. We haven't really rented out that suite in a long time. Well, I'd like to rent the suite. And then you do, and it's been, I guess it's been like 5 years. How long does it take? Anybody? Can we get my producer? Can you look it up? Can you look up how long does it take? I was taken for a while, and I spent a lot of my early years on radio talking about TV mummies. Now, what are TV mummies? Mummies on TV? No. TV mummies are people that mummify while watching the TV. They'll perish watching the TV. So let's say it's old. Picture your great granny or something sitting in a easy chair, watching her stories, watching Lawrence Welk. And then she perishes, and the TV stays on, and the bills are on auto pay or something, or her cousin's paying them or whatever, and she dies. No one notices for a little time. There's an odor of something. Somebody leave a pork chop on the counter, and then after the pork chop on the counter smell passes, people go back about their business. And then somebody say, let's check out the old Johnson place. And they go in, and there she is, a mummy, all desiccated. You know, you could dry if you dry out. If it's nice and dry, she had a dehumidifier going. and you would desiccate and dry out just like one of those Appalachian apple face people that you could get in a high-end craft store. I don't know the high-end. I don't know. I mean, I think it is a folk art. And drying out remains is a folk art, too, and it needs to be done more, I think. It'd be, I wouldn't go to one of those exhibits where they take people's skin off and then soak them in plastic and pose them throwing a Frisbee. I object to that. But if someone said, here's some people that are willing mummies, they're just frozen doing something they like, and they've been dried out up at the old, Nescafe factory or something, wherever they have a large enough freeze dryer up there is the only reason I mention them. But one of those places that makes instant coffee or something, and zip them in that, zip zap, boom, dry them out, and you're a mummy. And mummies are fun to look at. They're they can be educational because, wow, that's what so-and-so looked at. Without any moisture in them. But, you know, you get the general idea. There might be a way to, I'm not going to be, I know this is gross to some people, but hey, it's the human body. And, you know, it's just perfectly natural to take the remains and play with them like a toy. So, these are things that people talk about, and I just want to make sure that that we ground ourselves in reality. So, okay, I'm going to talk about some real things sometimes on the radio, like remains or poo or something like that. And they're all met. We are organic, living creatures who are, basically rotting, a lot of us. And as we speak, in a wonderful way, a wonderful, joyous way that we celebrate. And it is funny. I mean, what are you going to do? Well, a whole wonderful list of things are what you're going to do. Nothing consistently, I would always answer to that. What are you going to do? I say, no one thing, that's for sure. I'm going to probably vary them between sobbing and laughing hysterically, like any madman would. I break it up. I vary it up. I adjust the tempo, the dynamics of my madness. And so sometimes I'm screaming, sometimes I'm laughing. And I welcome you to do it with me, to accompany me on this crazy journey. It's like Wizard of Oz, but it just ends where it begins. Well, I think the actual Wizard of Oz ends where it begins, now that I'm thinking about it. Is that the point, though? Is it? Don't bother going to Oz. You just end back up in your room surrounded by farmhands. What does that mean, though? What does it mean to be surrounded by farmhands? And what child would want that? You wake up. Could you imagine being a small child and you wake up and you go, oh, okay, the guy that feeds the pigs is here.
Oh, you were asleep.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm here at your bed.
I was just having a dream that you were, like, made of something. Stone or wood or pebbles or I don't know. That all three of you were houses that pigs lived in.
Oh, I guess that's because I feed the pigs.
That was the original Wizard of Oz. What a complex person Frank F. Baum was. L. Frank L. Love Baum. L. Frank Baum. Frank L. Frank M. L. Baum. Who was it that did Wizard of Oz? I'll look it up, but that's close. And some of it, I know he wrote in Bermuda, because he had gone to Bermuda and he had gotten some bad seafood and he started to trip. And, I shouldn't have eaten that blowfish or whatever. And he wrote all the Wizard of Oz series, which all take place in Oz, but they're not all about the wizard. Ozma is one of them. Ozma of Oz. She does things. And another one, there's a fella named Skip. And I don't know. Byron. This may be real people. But I don't know, something like that. I don't get the 70s, 80s, all that could be real. It could be Wizard of Oz. My memories now are turning into an altogether different thing than they were when I was young. The accuracy of them is questionable. Or let's put it this way, they're accurate, but I'm not sure I'm always retrieving the answers to the questions I'm asking. And my memories are all mixed up. But they were that way as a kid, too, because I remember thinking that I couldn't remember whether I had actually been on a TV show as a kid that I was watching, you know, because you get submerged in it or was submersed or whatever. And you think, well, maybe I was right there with Cousin Ernie or Wally or whatever his name was on the Brady Bunches. Maybe I was there, too. Because when you're really little and you're staring at the television, you know, you kind of think, maybe I'm experiencing this. And screens do that to you. And so when we look at movies and we see a so-called special effect, and it isn't executed correctly, shouldn't we execute the person who made it? No, that's so harsh. But does it need to be fooling us? Should you, if you are trying to fool somebody, should you be punished for not fooling them very well? No, it's not right to fool people. So if you're fooling them poorly, meaning your special effects are bad, you're actually morally superior to someone like Industrial Light and Magic or something that's doing it, where you go like, I can't tell if that's real. That's evil. So I think that if you can see the brushstrokes, it is not of the devil. And it's wonderful to be seeing, you know, because really tricking someone is probably not a good idea. I don't know. But I've never thought that by making this radio show completely self-conscious, that constantly reminding you of what it is, what it's trying to do, what you're listening to, what it isn't, its shortcomings, its pointing out its pacing or its flaws. That's all part of something. What? It's a letting you see the insides. You know, it's like bowling at a plexiglass bowling alley. And I think it enhances the experience. See how it all works. But it's not magic. Isn't this wonderful? It's like I'm revealing magic tricks, but they're not magic tricks. Show me how you do it. There's nothing to show. Isn't that fantastic? It's just pure being together. That's theater at its lowest and worst, isn't it? So I'm going to a play. What's the play about? It's not really about anything, because the whole point is that the actors are just basically just keeping you company. Well, I could do that at home. Yes, but there's still an element there, isn't there, of expectation, anticipation, and surprise, albeit subtle. But it doesn't have to be dramatic, does it? Does everything have to be big? Can't things be quiet a little bit too? Does everything have to advance the narrative? Sometimes I watch shows that are very much plot-driven, and it's just, you want it just to get to the end. And I think, well, that's a dumb thing. You know, why would I want the thing that I'm watching to end? Just get there, just got to do it already. Oh, there's nothing to savor. And I like savoring. Yeah, I'm one of those kids that licked the frosting off of things, or licked things that thought had frosting that they didn't because they weren't food. And you can lick the surface off of anything. See, you could take it, start training with a Pop-Tart. And if you lick the frosting off a Pop-Tart, it's one of the tough ones. And you can get one of the abrasive ones. So you lick the smooth frosting like on a cinnamon Pop-Tart. But then they've got ones that are like, you know, low-grade sandpaper that have sparkle sprinkles on them. And licking those off the fruit Pop-Tarts will work up the callus on your tongue. And if you get that enough, this is like kung fu, like punching rope or something. You get that going, you can lick the frosting off of things that that weren't intended to have their frosting licked off. You could lick the plating, silver plating, let's say, off of something. I don't know why you'd want to, but that'd be a wonderful superpower to have. Say, I don't need any Homer Formby furniture refinishing chemicals because I have my tongue, which is calloused. And years of shellac will be removed by my robot cat tongue. That's what I call it. Oh, we all have sort of some secret weapons, don't we? If you do something for a long time or even a short time, you probably become an expert at it, because if you don't, you'll feel bad about yourself. So it's best to tell you you are. So let's say you're a musician and maybe you were never very good to begin with, but now you have sporadically practiced and been uninspired for 40 years maybe. So even though you sort of play skill-wise at the same level you did at 16, now you have wisdom and arthritis and bitterness, and all that can be poured into your music. And then just don't pour that into the music supply. Go ahead and pour that into the wonderful drain of your memories, the work sink drain of your nostalgia. And that's a wonderful place to keep many of our ideas. Not everything belongs in a museum. Maybe nothing does. Maybe museums give off the wrong idea. You know, we sort of all keep expecting museum pieces for anything. Whereas it's the ordinariness of things that's transcendent, or can be. Oh, that's a value that some people find. And I'd like to bring it to my spoken art. And you say, what do you mean? I mean that I do spoken wabi-sabi. There is a rough and cobbled, worn, flawed nature to my speech. So the ideas that I convey, to what I present as story, they are slightly sigoggling, as they say in Appalachia, a little off kilter, crooked, handmade, wobbly, squiggly drawn, like Dr. Katz cartoons and other underground comics. And that's the impression that I am giving, is of a thing hastily done, but done with feeling, an action drawing. That's what it is, just a vibe. And you have to get that through changing your aesthetics a little bit and gain an appreciation of things that are less than perfect, or they're perfectly imperfect. People who live in big cities have that all the time, and they cultivate it, and they walk by structures that you might find ugly, and they find a certain beauty in them, or a sort of elegance in the proof of their endurance. That if something still remains all worn and battered and showing proof of its survival, its scars, it's impressive. And there is an elegant, dignified beauty towards that building that's sort of worn looking, and maybe the paint is chipping, and there was an old mural there, an old advertisement, and that is worn, but you can still see the half of a hand-painted face of a child who was once eating cookies and drinking milk, but now it's just the exposed stucco and some stains from smokestacks and pollution. Time, rain with stuff in it. And we all have that on us as we grow old, too. Say, look at me. I'm like a building, an old building with skin tags and moles. I've got splotches and blops on me what I didn't have when I was young. I am glad that the focus of my eyes is changing, because if I had a good, crisp, in-focus picture of my legs in my head, I would be traumatized. Not because I think they're ugly, but because I don't remember the time passing. And to look up as a young person one moment and then down at your old man legs the next is shocking. And it's also sort of delightful. And the child in me delights at looking at my body change and giggling at it. I'm sort of mocking myself. Say, look at you now. You're not so pretty now, are you?
I am, in an old, elegant way, like an old building.
Yes, like an old wooden building in Japan. You look to me like a old Shinto shrine, and the wood has become gray instead of brown.
Go on.
And it's old.
I know, and?
Elegant,
see?
I know, it's wonderful. I embrace it, but I also say, oh, young people, look at you. We always good to be any age. It's sometimes not necessarily good to be alive per se, but try not to say things like that. I guess just listen to this radio show. Maybe just do that. And I don't know how many episodes there are now, but it seems to me that you could potentially just live your life listening to this only, at least for a while. And yes, it would run out. And yeah, what do you do after that? But something. It's good to plan your life, sure. We all need a plan, and I want to know where my next meal is coming from and how I'm going to pay the rent. But other than that, I try to leave things a little bit open-ended, especially stories about myself.
Tell me your story, Hardy.
No, I refuse to.
Where are you from? Where are you going?
No, if I tell you, it would be a lie. And I'll probably tell you anyway, and it will be a lie. Or it won't really be a lie. It's just that I acknowledge that if I were to tell you what I thought was my story, it would not be accurate. I would be either telling you things I wanted you to hear, or I wanted me to hear, but it would not necessarily reflect the truth. I'm not sure that I or anybody is really qualified to line up all the events of someone's life and make sense of them, to put them in a narrative. I think sometimes things just are. And it's, well, I see that I hear people tell the stories of somebody's life, and his mother worked in a shop, and his father often was a plumber, electrician, and carpenter who made ends meet by going over to the old baseball field and sometimes selling Coca-Colas. And then so he would come back home and he would see his parents, they were tired, and that made him think about, maybe I could make bed frames. Or something like that. And they all try to line everything up as having a reason. And that is not the case.
How do you know?
Well, because if you really go and try to tell a story, you won't be able to get past the first page if you really are honest about it. It's all moving on. I was reading something about somebody's life the other day, and there wasn't a lot of good firsthand information. And the person sort of writing the article wrote, as the story goes, so-and-so got on the bus and did it. I was like, as the story goes? At least you're saying you're lying. Here's a made-up tale about the person I'm writing about. And I like to do that about myself a little bit. I'm not trying to lie to get you to do something or believe something or say, where are you from, Hardy? Where's anybody from? And what does it tell you about him? I mean, I could be, well, I'm from a hole in the ground, maybe. Right? That's how I see myself. And it may not tell you anything about if I give you a place, you may not know anything about the culture there anyway. You know, what if I said, where are you from? And you go, I'm from New Jersey. Well, where in New Jersey? It matters. Well, I'm from part of New Jersey. that's not, it's on the other side of New Jersey. What do you mean? So it's not physically New Jersey. It's tough to describe. It's not South Jersey or North Jersey. So, I knew just telling you wouldn't even...
Well, here, for example, what do they call Taylor Ham, where you're from? They call it Schmingo sausage.
So I told you that wouldn't be helpful. And so it's a third thing, and it doesn't help you understand who I am, just because I come from where they call it Schmingo sausage.
Well, that doesn't even make any sense.
Neither does Taylor Ham, which is the actual name of the product, or pork roll, which is the name of the product. I understand that. Okay, so maybe my people are very different. But things that we think are information that will be helpful, like what do you do? What do you do for a living? I said there's a lot of videos like that. You can go on the InstaYube and they say, what do you do for a living? Can I guess what you do for a living, sir? And I go, no, please don't. What does it involve? It's sitting at a computer and just typing what they tell me to do. And it's just not my life. And I do other things. Like, for example, what else do you do? Other things that give me joy. And one of the things that gives me joy about them is not having to answer to anybody or explain them or anything like that, or to be evaluated because of that, or to be identified because of that, or to have it be my thing. I don't want to ruin the things that give me joy by having some sort of label pressed upon me. That's so just freeform it and be inscrutable and be weird and hard to pin down. That's my advice if you're a young person.
Well, I want to describe myself as a certain thing because that's what I want to be. Oh, whoa,
what if the thing doesn't, not whoa, like hold up, but also that, but whoa, W-O-E. Woe to those who would wed themselves to a specific label like that, because it might not be what you think. Like if it's the word artist or filmmaker or musician or anything, you might be limiting yourself in a way, or dooming or damning yourself in a way that you did not foresee. And I think that if you're in a culture that absolutely insists on everybody having some sort of sobriquet, right? So you've got to be Cindy the needlecraft person. I don't know. That's remember the rain? I remember a lot of that was Queen Cindy the needlecraft person. Old kings and queens had good sobriquets, you know, but just sometimes your friends don't have great ones. What I'm trying to say is that wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to be identified by something like that to gain stature, whether there wasn't any sort of stature or hierarchy. You didn't have to say what your social rank was. And a lot of people in a lot of situations don't have to. And it's wonderful to interact in that way. And I remember the closest I ever think I saw to real utopia, where it was just everybody was sort of like... equal and equally helpless and equally, was that We Are the World recording session documentary. We've got all these stars. So there's so many stars, no one's a star. And none of them had any kind of plan B for not being the star in the room. So they look around and there's nothing but stars, and they couldn't figure out star hierarchy very quickly. It's very tricky. You think, am I more famous than that person? Right? It's tough. And so you go, am I Michael Jackson? Am I my famous? So it's a weird thing. And it looked to me like a kind of brilliant, like maybe it was almost like a Shaker Village of egos. And they could all have some sort of equality there. Oh, no, we are not unequal, but inequality isn't what you think it is. necessarily, is it? I mean, are the trees equal to one another? They're all different. Comparing is the demon, right? Good, better, and best. Don't be lured by them. Oh, sometimes you've got what it takes for the moment. Sometimes not. Sometimes it's you. Sometimes it isn't. You know, let's say you go to one of them video games and you're spear guy and somebody else next to you is like a hatchet person and also maybe a sword person, and every moment calls for a different sort of weapon. And sometimes it's spear guy's time and sometimes it's not. So that's what all of us encounter, is every once in a while, I feel like I'm the right person for the job there, and I can step in and my life feels for an instant that it has some sort of purpose or significance. And then I go back to being a lovely, just part of the gang and waiting for my moment again and sitting here on the radio. Oh, one reason I started on the radio is to get extremely famous and well-known, and that has pretty much panned out. And as you know, I am not just a household name, mainly because of the bread, but also I think worldwide, potentially, I'm not known personally. I don't want to mislead you. I don't mean that I, Hardy White, personally am world famous or everybody knows who I am. But I am somehow. So I'm still trying to figure that out. But I know all my dreams have been realized. I just don't know why that's the case. But I realize that this is what I want. I'm just not sure why, because for so long I thought it was something different. And now I realize, yes, no, it's this. So this is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. I would like to be invited to more places and have someone else pay the travel expenses. So that is really not happening. But I've never really offered. Here's the problem. I don't want to do anything when I get there. And a lot of times they see it as a sort of quid pro quo thing. So it's like, we'll pay for you. Come out here, Hardy. All right. We'll pay your plane. Fantastic. And then, what would you like to perform? Where would you, how long is the act? And you go, whoa, 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 what? So I'm working that out. But I'd love if I could do it without working. It's not that I'm lazy. It's just that it's wonderful to spend one's time without, you know, a lot of obligations. And a show, that's a big responsibility. You got to be someplace at a certain time, and then you've got to say certain things and meet certain expectations, because a lot of times there's money on the line. But I don't know. I know, plane tickets cost money, so if somebody's spending money on me, they want me to make money for them. But it's my understanding that some people just need to get rid of money. Is this not true? So if you want to do it in my name, I'm for it. Oh, bless you so much. I'm so lucky. I'm just being silly here, trying to lighten your burden, because I recognize it's heavy. And that's all I'm doing. So I don't mean to be disrespectful in my silliness. I want to be a friend to you. And I want to recognize your struggle and acknowledge it and say I have no solutions to offer, just my love. And so I love you, friend. And you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online, WFMU.org, worldwide. Oh, my goodness, I'll see you again next week.
Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twin's name was 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 Ebony.
Come on, Trey.
Fancy lady.
We got to clear the stage real quick, y'all, because I can't see my band or nothing. I understand y'all some sexy ladies. Y'all want to come on the stage.
Show off.
Well, the sexy ladies go to G Wiz then.
Once y'all show off and show something.
Got two shoes on the ride.
Oh, no.
Rolling down 95.
Yes, sir.
You can see it in my eyes.
Hey, hey. Yes, sir.
Looking for a cutie.
Yes,